I'm going to call the Public Safety Finance Committee to order. Welcome back members and staff and members of the public, and glad everyone could get here on time on a snowy day. I just wanted to reiterate that there's the rules for the committee are in your folder if you forgot what they were. And I'd also like to remind members of the committee and also in the audience to turn off your wireless devices, your cell phones. When they're on, it does something to the audio in here, and we get a lot of static, so if you could please do that, I'd appreciate it. We're hearing this session, we're hearing for this meeting bonding bills, and the intent of the chair is to lay over all the bonding bills for possible inclusion into a public safety finance bonding bill. And I met with Representative Smith, who's the lead Republican of the committee, and I think we have a plan worked out that will be fair to the minority, where both our caucuses will, I haven't really quite figured out whether we'll rank or do it most important to middle importance, least importance, how some way we're going to rank the bonding proposals. I have given the Representative Smith and the Republican caucus ample time to meet and come up with their priority list, and then we'll come up with a bill, and we'll also have an opportunity at that time to make amendments if you want to move things in terms of priority. I have to say that I think almost all the proposals that we'll hear about training centers and labs, they're all good proposals. We're going to, as with anything, we'll have, there's limited amounts of money, and we're going to have to make some tough decisions, and our decisions may, of course, be overruled by the Capital Investment Committee. So, Senator Smith, did you want to add to?
Mr. Chairman, yes, just would you give us a reminder as to the timing when you want the bill out of this committee onto Capital?
We hope to have the bill out of here on Thursday, and I apologize to members about the schedule because we're meeting tomorrow and we're meeting Tuesday night, but this is on a fast track to get to the Capital Investment Committee. This is the only way we could do it. If push came to shove and we can't get done, we could go as long as, we could go to Friday, but we're hoping to get it out on Thursday. I think we'll have the bill for you Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, and that should give you enough time to
make it
to your members. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, so today we're going to be hearing from the agencies on their proposals. Tomorrow afternoon we'll be hearing bonding proposals for the training centers, and on Tuesday morning we'll be hearing bonding proposals for crime labs. Tuesday evening, we'll hear the remaining bonding proposals to this committee. So, without any further ado, we're going to start with the agency bonding presentations. Now, we also have bills that correspond with some of these agency projects, and I'm not sure if the authors of those bills are here, if they want to sit with staff when the presentations are being made. The first bill that we're going to hear or proposal is on Camp Ripley, from the Department of Public Safety, and that is Representative Doty's House File 2730. Are you here? Okay. So I guess we won't really move a bill, and we'll just hear the presentation, and I'll just lay that over, I guess, even though it's not a formal bill, and the possible inclusion into our bonding bill. So I think we have Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Public Safety, and there's someone, a Bloomington Fire Chief here, is it Yuli Seal? And that's anyone else? Okay.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, if you could just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, I'm Tim Leslie, City Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Joining me today is John Kerr, Deputy Director for Homeland Security Emergency Management, and Chief Yuli Seal. I also have supporters in the crowd. I have Brigadier General Joe Kelly and Christy Rollwagon from the City of Minneapolis as well. And Mr. Chair, if you need Representative Doty, he's in room 5 across the hall, and he can come in at any time. If you want us to do this all together, or else we can separate it, whatever your desire is, sir.
Yeah, we'll get them, just so we can move the bill. I think it would just make it easier. But you can go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. This is part of the governor's bonding proposal, and the governor's requesting $5 million for phase one of a full-scale disaster management training center at Camp Ripley. Also in that proposal is $3.65 million for a regional training center in Olmsted County, and $500,000 for the pre-design of a state emergency operations center. And the language in there is if all that money is not used for that, the remainder would be to update the pre-design for a co-located headquarters for the Department of Corrections and the Department of Public Safety. And I have Deputy Director John Kerr here to comment further about the state EOC. John?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Committee. Again, it's John Kerr, Deputy Director with Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chairman and Committee, our current EOC, of course, was established prior to September 11th. And in the years that have transpired since that event, the federal government has changed its requirements for a state emergency operations center, indeed any emergency operations center, considerably. And our current state EOC does not meet those requirements. There really isn't anything we can do to revise it or modify it so that it will meet those requirements. And that's the reason why we are requesting funds for pre-design of a new facility that can meet the Department of Homeland Security requirements.
So we don't need it. Mr. Vendetti, I'm just going to move your bill for you and let you go back to whatever committee you're in, but I just wanted you to be here. The chair will move House File 2730 for possible inclusion in the public safety finance bonding bill. So I just wanted you to be here when we're doing that. And if you have any opening, anything you'd like to say about the proposal.
Thank you, Chairman Tamar and members. I appreciate the time. This is a magnificent opportunity for public safety in Minnesota. It's the right place. It's the right time. I'm proud to be pushing this bill as hard as I can. I won't take any more of your time because these guys have all the good details that they're going to give you. Thanks again.
Thank you, Representative Doty. You want to continue with your presentation?
Yes, sir. In your packet, you'll see that there is Report 1 from 1999 of a regional training center study that was done by a group of 15 folks that the legislature identified. You also have Report 2 from that same study. In addition, you'll have an article written in a national publication on Rocco Forte and his comments regarding training centers and the value of those in relationship to the I-35W bridge collapse. You also see 6 letters of support for this proposal from the Chiefs of Police Association, Sheriff's Association, Fire Chiefs, Emergency Managers, and Ambulance Association, as well as the Fire Department's Association. From the Department of Public Safety's perspective, in terms of our mission, this proposal clearly fits within that mission of making Minnesota safer. Our Division of Homeland Security, and I'm going off of a PowerPoint. Unfortunately, I don't have the ability to present it to you, but it's in your packet as well. So I'm going through the slides, and if you want to follow along or not, if you have questions as you go, just holler at me. The three missions and goals for launching goals for the Homeland Security Emergency Management Division are effectively prepare for disaster. This proposal meets that as well. Efficiently provide response assistance and enhance recovery of a community through training. And this also fits the third one as well. We continue to have disasters in this state. Obviously, the severe storms and flooding from August, as well as the bridge collapse, we continue to have floods and tornadoes across the state. We led the upper Midwest in disaster destination. Unfortunately, Ohio passed us. I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess that's probably bad. Our desire is that every part of the state have the same level of preparedness. Now, that's, of course, very, very lofty goal, but I think we can handle it through this proposal. You'll notice, of course, I have some slides in there of our bridge disaster, the Rushford floods, BWCA fires, tornadoes, the bridge collapse, of course, is in there, and I think the overturned tanker, which the city of Minneapolis experienced most recently. What these all have in common is the fact that without proper training, fire planning, and multi-jurisdictional, multidisciplinary response, we would not have been successful in addressing those. And this proposal addresses that issue. For a little bit of history, recommendations from 1999 study that is in your packet is the fact that the consideration should be given for funding facilities with collaborative ownership among federal, state, and local agencies to maximize the cost efficiency of these proposals. And this proposal does that. We're partnering with the Department of Military Affairs, and General Kelly is here to address that issue as well. General Kelly, do you mind coming up?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Joe Kelly. I'm the Assistant Adjutant General for the Minnesota National Guard. And I'd like to just take a minute to explain, kind of in context, how this project that Assistant Commissioner Leslie's talking about could leverage some federal resources that are already being invested at Camp Ripley. Independent of this project, the federal government, specifically the United States Army, is making an investment of about $19 million in federal resources at Camp Ripley to build an urban training center, to build a little town. This complex will have 24 buildings. It will consisting of government centers, school, housing, a variety of buildings that you'd find in any community. It also has subterranean features, a sewer and a rail system and other infrastructure features. And it's designed to train our soldiers how to operate and fight in complex urban terrain that they're facing every day around the world. It's a very sophisticated complex. It will be fully instrumented. By that I mean it's a little bit like a Hollywood set in that it has the ability to use pyrotechnics and other simulations to recreate conditions on the ground that cause our soldiers to react. And it also has a video capability for post-operation reviews. How did you do during this particular operation when you faced the challenge? It seems to us that facility, with an additional marginal state investment, could be made very useful for our partners in civil responses, fire, law enforcement, emergency medical, emergency managers, and so forth, to give them an opportunity to train in a multidisciplined collective environment as well. So the National Guard is very pleased to be in partnership again with public safety and willing to take advantage of this opportunity and leverage the tremendous resource that we have at Camp Ripley in order to take advantage of the federal funding that's coming in to create this facility and create a heretofore, I think the Assistant Commissioner will explain, a heretofore unavailable facility to train all of our emergency response disciplines at a higher level than is currently available either locally or regionally. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, General Kelly. Any questions? Representative Bisson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, General, did the federal government anticipate any state aid when they came forward with this project?
Mr. Chair, Representative,
I didn't hear your question. Would you repeat it? I don't know if the sound is bad or what.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair General, did the federal government anticipate any state collaboration via funding when they anticipated this project?
General Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. This is a standalone military project, if you will, that's being done whether or not the emergency response disciplines are interested in investing in it or not. But it, again, it does represent an opportunity like we have every time we build a facility or a training environment in Minnesota to have other folks, other people than the military use it, like we do at Camp Ripley every day with the State Patrol, the DNR, the Department of Transportation, and many other agencies. But to answer your question directly, no, sir, it is a standalone project.
Representative Bissner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then to the second part, and maybe this was in the earlier testimony, and forgive me if it was, but I read in the bill that this is phase one, and phase one is for a $5 million appropriation. What is phase two, phase three, phase four? What is the total package going to be if we start down this road?
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, yes, this is a two-phase project. Phase one would build a building that would house an emergency management, disaster management training center, auditorium, and classrooms. It would also support hydranting of the CACTAF, the city that the military is going to build. The soldiers don't need fire hydrants, but our firefighters that would go there to train would. So while they're building it, the synergy would be to get in there now rather than build it later. It would also support a collapsed structure rescue facility, a place that would probably have culverts and broken pieces of a building that they would use to move around and cut through rebar and things like that, and then a trench rescue. That'd be phase one. Phase two is a $10 million request, and that would be for a dormitory and a cafeteria, emergency vehicle operating course, and a burn tower. That would finish phase two, and that was it, one and two.
Representative, this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence. One final question. Can phase one stand alone from phase two, or by funding phase one, are we now committing future legislators, not legally, but at least ethically, to have to fund phase two, especially in an unpredictable economy?
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I don't believe you're tied to the $10 million. That's going to be up to you, I guess, to tell us where we go with this in terms of a policy. But I think that Ripley has the ability to house people. I think we talked about one of the visions for this is, of course, to invite government administration, city managers, county commissioners, up to Camp Ripley. It's whether they want to stay in Spartan barracks or not, and how far they want to travel to get food and things like that. So the vision was to have a cafeteria and a dormitory built close by this training center. So it's really a couple of these things could be considered amenities, but it depends, it's kind of like who you're asking.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone want to continue your presentation?
Yes, sir. So I'll fast forward. 99 obviously was the study. And it talked a lot about what was needed at the time for regional training centers, and we got through 2001 with 9/11, Katrina thereafter. Things have changed. In 2006, we put together a work group of chiefs, sheriffs, emergency managers, and ambulance association representatives, a bunch of folks from the state agencies, DCA, Department of Public Safety, Homeland Security, State Patrol. We got together and started talking about what was the real needs, and what emerged was this, was that this tier three level of training, this all-encompassing, full-scale exercising that brought together all the disciplines together. The key factor in change from 99 to 2006 and forward was the amount of disciplines that were recognized as needed to be in the room during an event. It used to be they thought of just fire, police, and EMS. Now it includes government administration, public health, public safety communications, the radio system that performed so well during the bridge collapse. Those folks need to be at the table. Transportation, public work, they all need to be in the room during these conversations, during an event. And that's kind of a big break. So we overlay these new expectations with the leverage and the synergies that are going on at Camp Ripley, and that's where we came up with this idea that we could build a statewide emergency response, disaster response training center at Camp Ripley. If I could ask Lucille now to speak briefly about the Minneapolis experience and what they learned when they traveled to experience training like this.
The city of Minneapolis several years ago made a trip with 50 to 60 the top city officials and command staff, along with county officials, out to the East Coast, Mount Weather in Virginia, to engage in an integrated emergency management training course. That course took 4 or 5 days and took the city through a response to a major disaster. That training was invaluable, obviously, in the response to the bridge collapse. And I think that one of the roadblocks for more cities participating in this is that it's very difficult to get your top city staff and command staff to travel clear to the East Coast to participate in a course like this. In addition to that, there is a tremendous backlog of requests to get there, but having a training facility that's capable of doing the all-hazard, large-scale emergency management training that's necessary to train our command staff and city staff to respond to these events in-state and closer is going to be a lot easier to get people to participate.
Mr. Chair, members, there's really nothing like this in the Upper Midwest. Michigan is as close to a model. They're pretty well focused on hazmat and fire. This would be something that's very unique. There's nothing like it in North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, or Wisconsin. And I think it would be a place for not just our communities to train in, but also Upper Midwest folks as well from other states. What this place would do, of course, is have a central location, a place to work on hazards that we would face. Many times, the national mandates we face are things like a hurricane. Well, we're not going to train to a hurricane in Minnesota. What we would be allowed to do at Camp Ripley was to provide simulation exercises, demonstration exercises that would allow a whole region to come forward and train to the things that they would face. For example, southeastern Minnesota, the floods that they faced in August. When I'm talking to Chris Idy, the Director of Homeland Security, about this issue, I said, wouldn't it be nice, Chris, if all the emergency managers, sheriffs, city leadership from that part of the region would get together at a training center and talk about what they would do during a flood? And I said, before I say this in committee, I would sure like to know that that's never happened. That's never happened. So this is the kind of thing where people could get together and talk about how they would share, how they would communicate during a disaster. The chaos is tremendous. So they would need to know ahead of time how they would get along, who would be in charge, and what would be going on, and that's exactly what we would be focused on during this training center. The newest models of software that are out there allow this kind of thing to occur, where you can dial up, good or bad, the scenario you're going to face. You take a wrong turn during the scenario, the thing goes bad. You take the right turn during the scenario, it goes good. And those are the kind of things we'd like to demonstrate up there and test our people on so that they are also able to respond to a disaster like the city of Minneapolis did when they had the bridge collapse. Thank you, sir.
We have some questions for you, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple questions on the facility itself. How many people do you plan to have on base and to train? And also, will this be opportunity for civilians to get jobs on base?
Commissioner Leslie.
Chair PMR and Representative Dominguez. We're not sure about the number of jobs. I think I've talked to Colonel General Kelly, and right now there's maybe 20 to 25 jobs going on in the construction phase that's going on right now. And I think he's indicated 10 to 12 people would actually have to be on site and get permanent jobs to manage the CAC path. And then, of course, we'd have to manage the public safety position within that as well. Now, in your budget narrative, you'll see there's a amount of $570,000 as a operational budget for this. That's the pro forma amount we were given by the Department of Administration. When you propose to build a building, they tell you how much it will cost to operate that building. What that doesn't take into account is the fact that we would probably train a cadre of people from across the state to staff these positions at Ripley. In other words, when the week of folks coming to Camp Ripley to participate in training is going on, we may take a Bemidji firefighter, a St. Paul police officer, and a emergency manager from Watonwan County to come in that day who've been trained to manage the training facility that day. So rather than us have staff there that would just be paid by state government, we would reach out to our partners and spread the pain and spread the wealth a little bit as far as that goes. And as far as private goes, well, 85% of our critical infrastructure across the state is owned by private industry. So we see this as an opportunity to bring them in as well and have them in the EOC and have them trained with us at the same time to encounter the same problems we're facing.
Okay, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions. If this is going to be a shared facility with the military, how do you structure that, and what kind of time allocations are going to be available, and how does that work?
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, if I could defer to General Kelly for that.
General Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as I mentioned earlier, with some of the other state and local agencies that work and train at Camp Ripley every day, we have experience with sharing state federal facilities. Happily, most of the demand is offset from each other. Our soldiers tend to train on weekends because they are, they're out in their civilian full-time jobs Monday through Friday, and then weekends they come into the National Guard and train. Most of the law enforcement and other disciplines that want to train at Camp Ripley, they come during their work week, Monday through Friday. So we've had a reasonably, actually a very good arrangement in being able to do the scheduling. Depending on which element of government, federal or state, has the lead, determines who has primacy, who has priority for scheduling the facility, for scheduling housing and things of that nature. Right now, most of what happens up there is the state and local folks come and train on federal military facilities, so they do it on a space available basis. But as I said earlier, when they want to train, the space has been for the most part available. We did this with a few years ago, and I can't recall many. The legislature invested about $1 million into a shoot house at Camp Ripley, an indoor situational vignette-based firing range that is used by both law enforcement officers as well as the military, and that's been a state-federal share. In that particular example, which is very close to this, has worked out very well.
Thank you. Thanks for that answer. Another question has to do with capacity. What would be the capacity of this place, and how close will we be to using it to its full capacity? And if we don't, are we going to offer this service to other states or other areas that might want to take advantage of this? I mean, we had some people that went out to West Virginia or someplace to get this training. Is that something? Is there some income-producing potential here that we could see if this would expand?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland,
Commissioner Leslie,
I'm very hopeful that with the support of the associations that we've been working with, that this would be to the point where we have to turn external to the state away for a while until we feel that we're to the level where people have had enough opportunity to train there and they are feeling comfortable But of course, the crystal ball, I don't know what's going to face us in the future. And so we could be in a constant state of evolution where we're changing parameters and looking at new things that we haven't anticipated before. Maybe lack of imagination, you know, same as flying planes into buildings. I mean, we didn't anticipate that either. So I'm hopeful that we can, that we will fill the capacity of this and continue to offer the opportunity if it happens to externals to the state of Minnesota as well.
We have Representative Lee Bling, Diskins, Murphy, and Lilly, and then I'm if maybe that could, if that would be enough questions, because we have another DPS proposal and we have to hear from DOC yet this morning. So let's see how this goes. Representative Lee Bling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you. I'm generally very supportive of this kind of proposal. I think that training is really, really important. But I'm noticing, as I'm looking at this, I'm noticing that on the same proposal in the book here is the Olmsted County proposal, which is my bill. Mm-hmm. So I'm really familiar with that. But I'm surprised to see it put together with this proposal. And so I'm just wondering, you know, if you could just talk a little bit about, you know, why they're together. What would be the intersection between the two proposals?
Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, what emerged during our process, this 18-month or so process, is that there was a great need in the southeast region for additional training. And if you look at the southeast region, La Crosse, Winona, I can't think of all the cities, Austin, Albert Lea, obviously Rochester and Olmsted, Sheriff Borkart, in his explanation of his need, was very articulate about that. And if you look at the 2000 siting financing study that the legislature recommended that the committee go back and do, you'll notice most of those requests and criteria that were asked for at the time, they have met and definitely show a need. So we're trying to hit that need as well, at the same time it's hitting what the group that I worked with primarily felt that there was their primary need as well.
Representative Liebling, we are hearing your bill tomorrow.
Right, I understand, Mr. Chair. I'm not trying to go into that right now. I'm just kind of wondering what the dynamics were between the two projects. I mean, obviously they're not the same thing. And so is it expected that, you know, I mean, we're trying to do a regional system because we need to be close to where people need to train so they don't have to be gone from their work sites for a long time. But so is it expected then that this will sort of be a place to go for a more intensive or more specialized training and once a year? Or, you know, how do you envision that work?
Hey, Commissioner Leslie.
Mr. Chair, members, our Representative Lieben, your light bulb went on a lot faster than mine. It took me a while to get to that point. But, yes, that's exactly what's going to happen is the region would have Tier 2 level training, which is something that the region needs to get together to do. But as a state, we would have one site that would handle the entire emergency management training facility that we are proposing here. We would also include regional training opportunities for the north and central parts of the state at Camp Ripley, but it probably would not be efficient for the folks from Rochester, Olmsted, and the southeast to drive 2.5-3 hours to Ripley to do driving training, burn tower, have that kind of experience. They would assume to do that at near home.
Okay, Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize for just having seen these documents. I noticed that on page 4 of report number 2, there's a talk about preference given to regional training sites in where there is a collaboration amongst the cities and counties. Is there right now a commitment from the cities and counties envisioned to use this facility to actually provide match and recommendation in this report is up to 50%.
Commissioner Leslie.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I represent this. Are you referring to the Olmsted County?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'm referring to any entity that you envision using this facility. We're being told that a great place. You know, the collaboration for cities and counties, fire departments, police departments, etc. Are they, have they come to the table with a local match for this project?
I think that Tier 3 didn't have to follow that recommendation, if I'm mistaken. And we're going to have a report on this report tomorrow. But Commissioner Leslie, do you want to answer the question?
Good Chair, Representative Diskins. Yes, every regional request, and you'll see quite a few of them in the next, I think maybe Friday you're hearing many of them, you'll see that they must account for 50% of the capital costs must be borne by the community that's representing that region or that's sponsoring the facility.
Representative Diskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, then my understanding is that this project that we're talking about here would simply be a collaboration between the federal government and the state. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I understand it.
Thank you.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. And Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions. Maybe more.
Can you just pull your microphone down, please? Thank you.
Following up on the last statement about the federal, are you going to have federal rates and Minnesota rates?
Mr. Leslie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we have not talked about rates yet. That will have to be kind of borne out as we move, but I anticipate that, at least when I stayed at Camp Ripley, the rates are very reasonable. And we are that's one of the reasons this is so attractive, the features. Is that Camp Ripley, frankly, can do a lot of training, lodging, and meals for very, very reasonable rates.
Mr. Chairman, if we think of our individual experiences, and even now when we're doing our taxes, it seems, though, that there are always a little higher rates for federal things than there is for state things, and I would hope that you would maybe have a two-tiered system, because I think the feds are more willing to pay for more things than the state is, and certainly, and then sometimes the state is more willing to pay for certain things higher than the city or the county would, and certainly the township and the volunteer fire department kind of stuff. My second question is, you brought up that you have a shoot house at Ripley. Are you planning to incorporate a burn house at Ripley?
Commissioner Leslie?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, yes. In phase two would be a burn tower that would be deemed state-of-the-art that would allow the opportunity for firefighters to train there and get what they need by Camp Ripley in terms of those skill sets that are required to fight a fire.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when the Capital Investments Tour went on tour, one of the places we stopped was at the Burn House in a small town, which I can't quite remember because we went to so many places that day, but it was very close to St. Cloud and very close to where Camp Ripley is. And that would, in this burn house that has been so successful for that local area, fire area, then would have direct competition just this far away.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, in one of my slides, I talk about what the state legislature has funded in terms of training centers, and I can refer to that briefly. It's I think there's been five facilities funded. Not off the top of my head, we got the Merit Center, which is in Marshall, and they have a burn tower. We have Hutchinson, which was funded in 2000 to the tune of $240,000. They do not have a burn tower. That is an EOC, city-county joint EOC facility training center. Edina was funded in 2003, $500,000. They have a burn tower. 2004, I might be missing one now. Ramsey County was funded. That is a regional firearm facility. Scott County was funded in 2006. They are requesting a burn tower be built. Now, it's possible that, I know the city of St. Paul has a burn tower, I know the city of Minneapolis has a burn tower, and there's quite possibly other burn towers across the state as well. But I don't have that information. I was just giving information on what the state has funded in terms of regional training centers with burn towers.
Mr. Chair, the project that we visited was not a burn tower. It was a burn house. And they've been very successful with it. If my memory serves me, it was not a state project, but they are asking for state investment at this time to improve it. And that's why we were there, just to see what they do, kind of stuff. And
so, Commissioner Leslie, is the whole proposal then set in stone, or are there options to? If more information comes to light that we might be duplicating services in a regional area, would modifications be appropriate to save the state money?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy and as Representative Diskin said, Phase 2 is open. We have not requested that funding, but that's when the burn tower request would go into the Phase 2 and the next bonding cycle. So if something should change on the landscape, let's do an analysis of how close those other burn houses, towers, etc. are to Camp Ripley, and if there's no need, then we wouldn't build it there.
And Mr. Chair, I'll give you my note.
Okay, that would be helpful. Representative Carter, maybe you could sort of keep track of what's going on here, because I'm sure we'll forget some of us. Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair, members, I just more of a comment. I think these training facilities are great, and I'm happy to see, I didn't see Ms. Potts, she's not going to be running it. So, no. Anyway, the one from the East Coast. No,
oh.
These are great. It wasn't that funny this morning. I went to a Lutheran breakfast and they laughed at all my jokes, you know. But I noticed in your slides here, and it says an emergency is the wrong time to exchange business cards, and I just really think that's so true, and I thank you for bringing it forward. I really support all these projects. We had a drill in Maplewood last summer, and I just thought it was great. And they also invited elected officials because, you know, we're part of this COG, but it was really neat to see in the interaction between the police, the fire, and then the county. It was a mock bomb drill at a club, and honestly, there was many things that went wrong, and I think that's one of the strength of it. I see that as a strength to figure out, you know, what does go wrong and to deal with that. So I support these things. And then if you're worried about getting people up there, just invite them to that governor's lodge up there at Ripley. That's a pretty nice place you have there, and maybe you should rent that out, huh, Mr. Biskin? But thank you for bringing it forward. I think it's a great proposal, and I support these things. Anything we can do to make our people doing these type of things to keep us all safe is I very much support.
Are there any other questions? Is there anyone from the audience that wants to address this proposal? Okay, then the chair will lay over House File 2730 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill. Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have the presentation on the Statewide Emergency Operations Center. While we have a little break in the action, we're going to pass out some cookies to celebrate Valentine's Day.
Did you bake?
That I baked last night for all of you. And they're actually from Ms. Lyra, Ms. Lacombe, and myself. And they're nonpartisan cookies. As you will see.
I hope your sugar's good.
Yeah, I don't want anything organic.
And
yeah.
So we're going to hear from DOC now on your bonding proposals. And we do have authors here, and I'm not sure quite. Why don't we take them one at a time? Commissioner Benson, how do you... Commissioner Fabian, I'm sorry. Should we do this? Just do them in the order that we have them? Do you have an order that you'd prefer? Okay.
I did bring some homemade cookies.
Oh, wow.
It is not any kind of bribe. What I just wanted y'all to be happy and friendly. So,
one of the two friendly. Is Representative Fritz here? Let's wait for Representative Fritz. So how about if we do the Representative Haas and Representative Bunn have the House file 2710. Is that okay,
sure.
Commissioner?
I think Barbara wants to get the representative, but that's fine. Any
okay.
way you want to take them.
Yeah, well, we'll do after President. You know what I would like first, Commissioner, are you prepared at all to brief the committee before we have the two authors come up on the issue that happened at Stillwater, or would you rather have a separate time to do that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not prepared today, and we are making a lot of headway in our investigation, and we definitely will be informing you of the outcome of what's going on. It's real complicated, and you'll see when we present what's happening.
Okay.
So if it's okay, I
prefer to
wait for the investigation
to totally complete. And when do you anticipate that?
Fairly soon. I mean, we, you know, obviously as we talk to offenders and get more information, you know, there are more people that we interview, but we feel like we're getting to the end of the case and have gotten a lot of really good information.
All right.
You know, if I may, though, I just wanted to say that usually Dennis Benson is up here with me. And I don't know if all of you know, but Dennis has been recruited to another team. Human Services has asked him to become the executive director of the Civil Commitment Sex Offender Treatment for their department. And so he'll be leaving on March 5th, and we're really upset about it. But we have some, he through three different administrations and commissioners, and we're not always easy to work with. Dennis has certainly been the strong, reasonable, eloquent voice of corrections. He's been around for over 34 years, and he was one who could answer every single question that you guys would throw at us, and we're really, really gonna miss that. And so I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of that. So we're bringing in some. We've got some excellent replacements that I'll introduce as we do our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And
Mr. Chairman, I blame Fox TV. Follow the movie Prison Break. They are literally simultaneously following the still. They just had a prison break digging out underneath the tunnel underneath their prison. So maybe it's just they don't have any television and didn't have a problem.
No more TV.
I tend to agree about some of us myself. Okay. Okay, now we have Representative we will. The chair will move House File 2686 that deals with the Faribault Prison Expansion. Mr. Fitz, do you want to make some comments?
Well, thank you, Chairman Pimar and members. I'm happy to be here again with our 2008 Phase 3 proposal for the Faribault Corrections Facility. And we have the Commissioner, the Assistant Commissioner, and my Warden and others here to do a presentation. I'm going to leave it to them, but my comments are this, that we're very proud of the facility in Faribault, and it employs many people, and this phase three, again, will make sure that the folks that are working there are safe, and so are the folks in the community. So this is, the safety aspect of this is very important and utmost important to me and to the workers in our community, and thank you for hearing this today.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. Commissioner, do you want to proceed?
Yes. You all have the handout that... Okay. I wanted to make sure. I think we've made a number of presentations talking about the huge increase in our population, and this third phase of the Faribault project is the third of four phases that will double the population at Faribault Prison, and it's a major component of the department's long-range strategy in dealing with or managing our population growth. So on the first, or on the handout, you notice what we're really looking at here is a cost of $16.3 million. We're going to demolish, we have a color code. We have it's color coded here, and what we're looking at is the green portion, and that is a intake and receiving center, and that is critically important. Right now, if you look on your theme here, at the top of the page on the right, there's like an A. At that point is where right now we are receiving all of the inmates and discharging them when they're released. So there's approximately, 4,000, over 4,000 offenders a year, about 80 a week that we either are bringing in or processing out. And that is in a non-secure area, and it houses the administration. So what we need to do is have a safe, secure place for them to come in. We also need that point for receiving all of our deliveries, and we'll be able to process it there, and it'll be a lot more efficient and less time than trying to get it from all the different buildings. It also will be the security operations for the new center. Do you have any questions about what it does? We cut in half. We originally going to have only three phases, but we have cut that down to this building. It also will be two buildings on that site that will demolish. We were originally going to do the fifth K building, but that will be the next phase.
And commissioners, are you going to speak to the bed impact on your handout? I just wanted you to address the beds that are currently rented from CCA.
Sure. We have right now from phase one and two, we are just going to be starting to. Start filling the buildings in the K buildings down at the bottom, those three. Starting March 1st, we'll be transitioning 100 inmates in at a time in that building, and by the end of June, we should have two of those buildings full. After the completion of phase three, we'll end up having a capacity of 2,028. Right now, we're renting beds from the Corrections Corporation of America. We have almost 1,200. I think it's 1,200 now there at this time. So. The other thing, right now we currently are remodeling in the blue phase there at the top next to that administration building. That currently is closing, and we'll be taking people out of there and moving those people into the K building. So we can't bring everybody home from Prairie at that time.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many will be left, do you anticipate, at the Prairie Correctional Facility?
Commissioner Fabian.
Chair, Representative, I think I'm going to bring the warden down to talk about the specifics.
Okay,
and see, if Dennis Benson were here,
he is there. He is there.
And then,
he loves to get up here in front of you guys.
I'm going to miss this, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, then, before you begin, I just want to really say publicly, I just in the 10 years that I've been here, mostly in this committee, I've just really appreciated your candor and your honesty and your willingness to work with this committee in dealing with some very hard, difficult questions as we've been increasing our prison capacity and all the problems and the financial problems making that work, and I think you have really demonstrated just top-notch integrity, at least working with me, and I would suspect the rest of this committee, and we will miss you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I was going to ask for 5 minutes before this committee anyway. At some point, Barbara was going to, she's good at that, you know, getting me time in front of committees. But I wanted to also just acknowledge what a pleasure it has been to work with this committee. This is my 12th session, and I can tell you that the leadership on this side of the Capitol has been exemplary for all 12 of those years. You have asked good questions, tough questions. I think you have worked very well with the agency and with the executive branch, and I'm most impressed with the fact that I think you all thoroughly understand the importance of public safety and the role of corrections in public safety. We run a good system in Minnesota, and I'm reminded of that every fall when I go to a deputy commissioner's conference, and I get to hear about all the horror stories across the nation, and we're responsible, I think, for about 60% of that, but I think the legislature is responsible for a good chunk of that as well. You listen to us, you properly fund this agency. I will tell you that we can't afford to put any money on the table as I walk out the door, and I know that's going to be an issue this year. We're still growing. You acknowledge the value of treatment programming in our facilities. We've got a great research team in corrections right now, and there's a chemical dependency report that's going to be available. I ask that you might want to take a peek at that, maybe have a hearing on that. With a population that's so predominantly chemically dependent, that's very important. But just to summarize, it's been a great experience for me, and I'm still going to be kicking around here for a couple of years working with Department of Human Services, and we are going to be partnering with Corrections, too, as we try to figure out a way to create a seamless system of not only treatment, but care for this segment of the population of sex offenders. I think there's a lot of work to do there as we move forward. But you've never offended me. You've asked, again, the tough questions. I think you have made us a better department, and you've worked with us. I hear horror stories about systems that pass sentencing enhancements without asking for fiscal notes and overcrowding prisons, and that doesn't happen in Minnesota. While we have some double bunking, we don't do a lot of it at the high end, and that's been very helpful. But as the commissioner said, the people that are filling in behind me here are excellent people. Lynn Dingle and David Crist have over 60 years in the agency between them, and they come from facilities, and I would certainly suggest that you continue to listen to them. They're not going to lie to you. This department, I think, has worked hard at establishing credibility with legislative leadership, and we're going to tell you the stark truth, as we always do, and I'm sure you will reciprocate, and I think that's what's made this department so strong. So thank you. And in response to your question, Mr. Chair, The fact remains that we will still have a presence out in Prairie. We think that by the time we get all of the buildings online and we get the SAG unit, the new SAG unit online at Stillwater, that number could come down under somewhere between 500 and 800. It sort of depends on the growth of the agency. We're still growing, remember, at a couple hundred a year, so there's going to be growth on top of moving those people around. And the one thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to me is to dump Prairie out, fill every single bed in the system, and then we sort of start all over with filling up this relief valve. I was the guy who 12 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago said putting prisoners in a private facility is a bad idea. And I think over time I have also acknowledged that, you know, it does serve a purpose in this agency. It's the relief valve up and it can be the relief valve down. We aren't laying off public servants. We aren't hiring them back. So I think using that facility as a relief valve is a good idea. With that facility and with the beds that the agency is bringing on, you have enough beds to manage the growth for a period of time. We have some wiggle room that we haven't had for many, many years. So I would suggest that you work with the agency in terms of how deep you want to cut into that Prairie population. The cost is very similar. We watch them very closely. There are good Minnesotans that are working out there. They have a chemical dependency program that's analogous to what we offer in our system. They have employment, and there's a segment of our population that it seems to work pretty well out there. So, again, rather than crowding the system, I would ask that you just pay some attention to the numbers. But bottom line, 500, 800, right in there, again, depending on growth.
Thank you, sir. Congratulations on reaching that number by more than half. I'm very pleased to hear that. The other question that I have is, back in 2004, we were given some information about, you know, what this additional space was going to do for bringing down per diem and for bringing down costs and savings. Do you know where we are now in those projections? Because, you know, we always like to know if we actually get to what, you know, we're told when we start.
Commissioner Benson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I can tell you that what we're in the process of doing, I asked for this about 3 weeks ago, is to figure out what the per diem would be if we had every bed in our system full. So our Department of Finance is working on that. We know that we are bringing those beds on at a marginal cost of right around $50 a day. I think when this were bonded, we thought it was around $40, $42. With inflation, it's gone up a little bit. But we're bringing these beds on pretty cheaply. And I can tell you that right now our per diem is up a little bit. And the reason it's up is we are hiring staff to staff up these units. We've hired a number of staff. They're in training. And there are no offenders. So you've got lots of additional costs without the bodies. So until the bodies come, that per diem is going to spike a little bit. You're going to see a spike in our per diem. We're up around, I think we ended last fiscal year at about $85, $86. Next fiscal year it's going to be a little higher until we get all of those beds full, and then it'll start to level off again. But remember, there's inflation that's occurring every year, too. So when I came to central office, our per diem was $87 a day. That was 12 years ago. And we ended the year this past year lower than that, and we've absorbed those 12 years of inflation. So I think that's a pretty good number. Again, the way that relates to Prairie, their number is around $70, $72. When you figure in the central office cost, and the cost of our mediums is around $70, $72. So, you know, again, the fact that, you know, they kind of sell privatization on it's cheaper. I don't believe that if it's cheaper, it's not much cheaper, but it's not more expensive either. And it's just, at the end of the day, I think it's kind of a wash.
Representative
Biskin. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make the comment that I look forward to seeing those numbers because March 2nd, 2004, we were given a handout that said that when all of these came on board, the average daily cost to in-house offenders system-wide would be reduced by approximately $8 per inmate and the result would be significant future savings, and based on today's population, it would result in an annual savings of approximately $20 million. So at the end of the day, I'd like to see where we really ended up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I don't doubt that that number will be close after we factor in all the inflation from 2004 through 2008, 2009, probably 2010, when they're actually full. I think you're going to see a significant savings, but inflation is a part of that equation.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on the Internet, where there's WFID all the state projects, this one, in its descriptor, says that phase one will be completed in January 2008. Seeing as we're already in February of 2008, my question, Mr. Chairman, is was phase one done on time and on budget?
Oh,
Mr. Chair, Representative Diskin's true to form, it's a few months behind, but I think we are going to be bringing offenders in isn't it April, March? So we're a few months behind, but and it is very close to within budget.
No. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, commissioners. I will. The chair will lay over House File 2686 for possible inclusion in the public safety finance bonding bill. Representative Haas and Bunn, House File 2710. If you want to just make a brief comment, we're running short on time, and we have a few more proposals that we need to. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Larry Haas, and I have the bill for 2710 for asset preservation. And I thought it would be an opportunity when we're in this competitive...
Could you just move the bill just to...
Thank you. I'd like to move House File 2710.
Mr. Haas has moved House File 2710. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. As we're in this competitive mode, as we're going to take in the total big picture, we're going to take $4 billion worth of requests down to $1 billion. A temptation you have within your individual budget, within the total budget, is take those things that can be repaired and put them off for another day and put something in here that is a little bit more tenfold and has a little bit more excitement than fixing a roof or a boiler or a cooler. In my opinion, and my past experiences indicate to me, we should be doing just the opposite of that. We should be moving higher priorities to fixing what we have, because they're very important. And if we look at it analytically, it is safety, it is efficiency of dollars, and you get your payback from heating and cooling. And so it is a really excellent investment. Plus, very few asset preservation things are hard to get up and hard to get on the ground and not hard to get on the ground, and they produce jobs immediately. Now, I have a little selfish reason, but we're only about 1/11th of the request of what's necessary in asset preservation. In my area, we have the oldest of the facilities, I think that's 1889, and it has the second longest granite wall in the world. Now, I don't know who measures these, but supposedly we have the second longest. Now, we're not on the list of the priorities even to get to the $22 million, but in case of emergencies, the money is flexible enough that they can come back if something moves up, if a furnace explodes or a granite wall falls off because it wasn't tuck-pointed or whatever. So I appreciate the concentration on the importance of asset preservation. And with that, I will...
Thank you, Representative Haas. Representative Bunn, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Paymar. I'm here today because my sleepy little district that extends from Stillwater down to Woodbury in East Metro is the home of two of our state prisons, the Oak Park Heights prison and also the maximum security prison and also the historic Stillwater prison. This last year I've had the opportunity and the pleasure to get to know the wardens of both of those prisons, and then and have the pleasure of working with their staff as they educate me on corrections issues. They have been very effective at communicating with local officials and also bringing my state senator, Kathy Fulton, and myself into this process by involving us in their quarterly community meetings, advisory meetings. And in this process, from the very first day, the very first meeting, they informed us of these asset preservation projects that would be coming down the road that they very much needed, and in some cases, almost an emergency level fund for. These two prisons are, as I said, the old one, Stillwater, is in need of continuous upgrades of various kinds, and the Oak Park Heights prison, while quite newer, has, because of its design and construction, has encountered some fairly significant environmental hazard issues. In both these cases, as Representative Hogg alluded to, security is a prime focus of these upgrades and these funding requests. On page 3 of your handout is where you'll find these. And both the Oak Park Heights and Stillwater would be addressed by the $22 million request. The governor's emergency bill last year, and also included in his bill this year, are the Oak Park Heights request. As you can see from this page 3, the first of these is very much a safety issue. They have an aging security system, which they can't even get parts for anymore, that they have to rig up on a regular basis. And they also have fencing that has some serious issues that can collapse under the weight and stow and other kinds of issues. More importantly, for the safety and health of the workers and the inmates, they have a serious health problem with ventilation and mold in this prison that's been going on for a long period of time, and that would put them in violation of OSHA if they do not step up and correct this in a very timely fashion at this point. Similarly, the Stillwater requests at the bottom of page 3 are both a safety and health component. We have a potential water safety issue that's mentioned in the last item. These two prisons sit within a residential neighborhood in these communities and also in a very scenic portion of our state. Security is the utmost concern for the residents of my district. So I very much ask you today, and as you consider these bonding requests, in line with what Representative Haas stated, not only is it a good investment to maintain these facilities and to save the energy and other things by upgrading them, but it's also essential that we do so for the safety of our citizens and for the health of those working in these facilities. In both these cases, the employees' health is at risk from these two issues. So I appreciate your time, and I'm sure Commissioner Fabian will maybe elaborate on this. Also, the two wardens involved, although I think Warden Dingell may have been given an upgrade or promotion since I met her last, given some of the things I heard today, are both here present as well if you need to ask them any questions with us today. So I thank you for your time and hope you'll give the full $22 million request in our bill the fullest consideration, as the safety and health components of these really necessitate action on them. Thank you,
Representative, for your testimony. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I could get some clarification on the numbers. As we look at the handout from the Department of Corrections, on the front cover, asset preservation is listed as a $15.1 million request. As I go to the inside to look at what those asset preservation projects are, I come up with $10.5 million in requests. And then as I look at the bill, I see $22.09 million in requests. I'm confused, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative, I'm a little confused also. Maybe just some clarification, because I look and I see $196 million in requests. Commissioner?
I can clarify that, and I do want to say I think we've found Dennis's replacement here with Representative Haas and Representative Bunyan. We asked in the governor, in the request to the governor's office, we asked for $22 million. We didn't get $22 million, we got $15 million. $15.1 million just on the front. On page 2, we were adding up the things that we absolutely have to have that the representative just talked about, that are life, safety, and, you know, staff concerns. So that came to just for those projects. The 129,000 on the back, or
190,
is all of, you know, we take it very seriously to preserve the buildings that we have, that it's our responsibility. This is what we have, a long-term plan as far as, you know, fixing what needs to be fixed. So this is what in all of the facilities has to be done. And I think, you know, you look at the fact that 24 hours a day, you know, every day, we have people living and working in those buildings. And, you know, it is our responsibility to be good stewards and to get it. At this point, we're certainly not asking for the 196 million. I don't think we get it. But we do want you to know that we have a process in place where we do, you know, go over all of our facilities and make sure that we have what we, you know, we have a plan for replacing it.
Okay, just so I'm clear here, so that the 196 is, you know, obviously this is long-term asset preservation need. You asked for 22 million. And then the governor recommended $15 million, roughly. Okay. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Chairman, it still leaves a gap, because as I look at the back page of all of the projects that add up to the 196, I see the ones in blue to be the ones that add up to the absolutely must-haves. Right? Well, there must be, there's a gap between that number and what the governor recommended, and I'd like to know. I think the legislature should ought to be privy to what will that extra $5 million that the governor recommended pay for, and this legislature should also be privy to know what is the extra $12 million that this bill would provide above the blue listed numbers. What would that go to fund?
Representative Bunn, do you have a response to this?
Well, I'll give this a try. I have a sheet in front of me that I don't think is a version that's in your packet, but it was clear from this what was going on. Of the 15.1 million that the governor requested, 6.49 was for the two Oak Park Heights projects that I referred to, the ventilation and the security system. Then the governor has also had an 8.6, which probably goes to what Brooksons is referring to, department-wide for a whole variety of other projects that's considered urgent. And so that adds up to the 15, okay? Then in addition to that, if you want to add in the two Stillwater projects, that comes up to the 22 million. So the governor's had a Oak Park Heights component and a more general component.
And some of that is discretionary money, so that if a boiler goes out or if, you know, we have to replace something in an emergency, we have some discretionary money as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understand this correctly, and it seems kind of odd knowing, at least in education, when there were bonding requests, we had to spell out every single dollar that was being expended. But the way this reads to me, it seems like the governor is proposing a blank check to the agency to fund whatever they see fit. Is that how this is working? And then how did he come up with 8.6 as the blank check? Why not 10? Why not a nice even number?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we came to the you know, budget hearing or the capital hearing with this list of what our priorities are. We did not get all of our priorities, but we specifically got the two Oak Park Heights and the first two on the page, on the second page. The rest of it is we have 10 different operations, and again, they're all, we inherited two old hospital buildings. We have two 100-year-old facilities. There are things when you're operating, you know, facilities, 10 different facilities that are, you know, emergency. And you can't, you know at the time of the hearing, at the hearing, whether you're going to have, a boiler go out or an explosion in the kitchen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And last statement I'll make, and I understand emergencies, and that's why agencies, businesses, homes have reserves. And so you fund and you pay for emergencies out of your maintenance budget line item, you pay for it out of your operations line item. You don't bond for what you don't know. And that's where I have a confusion, is we're setting out bonds, and what are they buying with the bonds? Well, we don't know. We'll figure it out if something happens. I don't get that.
I'm a little confused, too. So, Commissioner, maybe you could provide the committee, because when maybe it's just the way that the sheet, if Representative Biffkins is correct, if you add up those items in blue on page 2 of the handout, it turns out to $10,590,000. And I think that you should let us know what the other $5 million is going to be, Commissioner Benson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biffkins, committee members, just to give you some history on this, for many years, the Department of Administration got an appropriation for asset preservation for all of state agencies. So then if we lost a laundry like we did, we had a laundry fire here 5-6 years ago, and we do have insurance, but it certainly didn't cover everything. We had a kitchen burn down once that we couldn't anticipate. We have had boilers go out. We've had lots of freezers go out. Last year at Moose Lake, we had a pipe break in the middle of the winter that was a couple hundred thousand. So again, as the commissioner said, with 10 little villages, there are things that just happen that you cannot anticipate. And it would be nice if in our appropriation we had a reserve for the broken pipe, for the broken freezer, for the laundry fire. But we just don't. The reality is we don't. And what has happened the last, I think, 3 bonding cycles now is the agency has been given, instead of Department of Administration carrying this reserve amount of several million dollars for agencies to kind of bleed off of that, it's been appropriated to the agencies. This is not a new deal here where we get some discretionary asset preservation, and hopefully we won't have that laundry fire. And if we don't, then we kick right into our list of $192 million worth of projects, and we'll start doing some of those. But I can tell you, again, having been here for 34 years and in this position for 12, every year things happen that you can't anticipate. And again, as the commissioner said, when you've got buildings that are 100 years old, things happen. Pipes break. They find asbestos as a problem. That happened at St. Cloud about 8 years ago. In the pipe cases, the asbestos was exposed, and we had to fix that. So it's things like that.
So, Commissioner, we're running a little out of time here. So in other words, whether you get the $15 million or $20 million, you will then take the additional money and go down the priority list and correct. Make those repairs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. We've got 2 more proposals. We're running a little late. Representative Bigham, you had a question. Sorry.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Commissioner, with a little bit of minimal planning, are these projects pretty much ready to go?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay,
and Commissioner, then, do you want to describe the final, the Shakopee fence? Do you have any? Let me just do one thing here. Let me lay over House File 2710 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill.
I know we're short on time. Is it okay if I bring up...
Sure.
David Fisk is the new Assistant Commissioner, and Lynn Dingell is the new Deputy Commissioner taking Dennis Benson's place. And so we were going to share the presentation here, but I didn't work it out right here. So right now, David Fisk is going to discuss
you. Commissioner Fisk?
Representative Pamer, members, my name is David Crisp. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Corrections, and I'll speak very briefly about the Shakopee fence design. where we have $550,000 in the governor's budget for this request. We are aiming this at public safety, protecting the neighbors and the school children in the area, protecting staff and offenders at the facility, preventing escapes from the facility, and working with the neighbors to come up with an aesthetically pleasing design for that fence.
And were you able to reach a compromise with the neighbors?
We're still, Mr. Chair, members, we're still working on that. There is a very vocal minority in the area who don't want the fence, but we've also heard positive comments from others in the area that, that support being safe, not having fleeing felons hiding in their garages, not worrying about fleeing felons harming school children right across the street from the facility, etc.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, while not directly analogous, I think at least peripherally, you understand more than any other legislator the importance of prior commitments between communities and government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions about the fence, Commissioner Bailey?
I just wanted to say that they really have not found any prior commitment. I know that the mayor had said that there was an agreement, and so he went back to find it, and I've been advised that there was no agreement, and, you know, obviously I wasn't there at the time, but they couldn't find it in any meetings or minutes that said that, you know, we had agreed that there'd never be a wall. It is the only prison in the United States that doesn't have a wall. We do have a hedge, but it's not very high. Yeah. So, you know, we really feel very strongly that we want to work this out with the neighbors. And as, tell me, Warden Crisco, said, we, you know, really know it's a smaller percentage that don't want it. We're very, and that's why it would be a rather extensive fence, is we're really trying to work it out, and that's what the warden is doing with neighborhood groups. And the ones that are right really in the area, the majority of those want it, understand it's going to be something that looks good, kind of like the governor's residence. So we, you know, we just really feel it's a liability for us and for the state if something would happen and we're, you know, not having something. But it definitely is not going to be the big razor wire or anything that they said.
Is there any other questions? Okay, we're moving. I have one very unimportant comment. If we're going to protect our prisons with hedges, I recommend, as a past park director, European buckthorn or prickly ash. Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. We have one more bill. I know we have session here, but let's hear about House File 1207. Representative McNamara, welcome to the committee. The chair will move House File 1207 for possible inclusion in the public safety finance bonding bill. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to go real quick. You have a one-page handout. We made a point to not bring the fancy PowerPoint and all the tag boards and stuff that I think most of you have already seen. This is by far the best project you will see and get an opportunity to include. This project and the work that Superintendent Zander has done in Red Wing is unbelievable. We are helping reform these young adults that have gotten on the wrong side of the law. We don't want to keep them incarcerated until they're 65 and spend all the money that we have to spend to build the facilities where in Faribault, Shakopee, Oak Park Heights, whatever, not Shakopee, because it's all young males down here. Representative Wolfsager and I are both on the bill. This is a fantastic bill. I guess I'll let Superintendent have about a very, very short little presentation and then we'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair. This is unbelievable. What it's doing to help these young adults to get vocational training and be able to go back into the community and get straightened out. If any of you have never been down there,
I strongly recommend, because once you visit it and seen the work they're doing, you will be on board with this project. And it is ready to go. Representative Bingham left, but this has been, the design's been done, the project's ready to go. This is, how do we say, boots on the ground or bulldozers in the dirt or whatever. This one's ready to rock and roll.
Superintendent, would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Madam Chair, Super Chair and members of the committee, my name is Otis Anders. I'm the superintendent of the Red Wing facility. First of all, I would just acknowledge that this vocational building, which has been a perennial request, does have the support of the commissioner and the Department of Corrections. Unfortunately, it was not submitted in the governor's recommendation. That said, this is a project that we feel very, very important about, to have submitted it every bonding year. Again, I want to thank Representative McNamara for his commitment to trying to see this project through and his support of making sure we have a hearing. Again, this facility at Red Wing houses the state's most serious and chronic juvenile offenders, but the centerpiece of operation is an educational program. On the grounds of Red Wing is McGinnis High School, where we offer academic and vocational programming. We're very pleased that the vocational program, as well as the academic portion, but at any given time, because of the length of our program, 30 to 40% of our residents have achieved their GED or high school diploma. They give us a tremendous opportunity to improve the vocational program and follow the research. Currently, this request is to replace existing vocational location. We offer right now three vocational programs that we feel that are research-based, that provide opportunities for our young men once they leave their program. The research is also showing us that as the current generation of workers in the trades are aging out, there's a tremendous void there. So we feel there's an opportunity to prepare the young men as part of our reentry program. But again, as the bill will suggest, our current buildings are located in areas that are 120 years old. The environment is not safe at times, or is not ADA eligible, what have you. So it's an environment that needs to be upgraded. Also, the physical plant is located scattered around the facility, which is separated from our academic portion. This building was suggested to be connected with our academic building, which make our academic and vocational program seamless. It would make it safe, less traffic on our ground, make it more secure, but also an environment that will give us a chance to improve our vocational programming. This building also, again, with the percentage of our young men that receive their GEDs and high school diplomas, allows to do some advanced programming as well. Construction trade programs can get into more of all of the aspects of that, such as drywall, metal hanging, and what have you. Our metal fabrication could get into welding. So it'll give us the space. It'll give us an ideal environment that we can allow our academic and vocational programs to be greatly enhanced. And again, this would be, following the research, will allow us to, at that time, to continue our relationship that we have with the trades, as well as with several other entities in our communities that offer furlough or transitional construction trade type of apprenticeship.
Thank you, Superintendent Sanders. Just a quick question to the McNamara or Commissioner Fabian. This isn't on your list from DOC, so how does a project like this get manifested to
Mr. Chair, it was, you know, certainly one of our priorities, but it didn't make the cut with the governor's office, and part of that is because the ones that did were, you know, we were just more concerned about life and safety issues.
I see it. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Questions of Representative McNamara or the Superintendent? Well, thank you both for your testimony. We'll lay House File 1207 for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Finance Bonding Bill. That is all of the business that we have today. Members will be meeting in Room 5 tomorrow at 1 o'clock. This meeting's adjourned.